Welcome to Combat Sports Talk, a podcast dedicated to UFC and Bellator discussion, the MMA community, and combat sports in general. I'm your host, Ryan Smith. And joining me this week is the man who says Factory X more than the people who work at Factory X, KC Onyebuchi.
That's how we want to do the introduction?
I'm just getting it started. You know, you're probably going to say Factory X like 13 times. So I'm just going to go ahead and just start introducing you that way.
I mean, there's some former Factory X people on this card.
Yeah, I'm sure you will. You'll let us know. And the man who needs forgiveness because he knows not what he does, the man, John Keys.
What
is up with the intros today?
I know, right? I mean, oh, I know what he's talking about. Okay, we could talk about it later on in the show.
No, we talk about it right now. Because the fans have been following this saga for so long that it is time to put an end to it. It is time to put it to bed. Go ahead and tell them what we're talking about.
Okay, people, and good evening. So, over the weekend, I was thumbing through the world of Facebook, you know, laughing at funny, looking at political stuff, looking at food, because that's what's on my Facebook. And I saw something. I saw something that said that, you know, with it being the month of Easter, it was like the burning bush chiseling out the commandments. It looked to me. It said, free play Arlington, Texas, Street Fighter Tournament on the 12th through the 14th. Bring your quarters. Bring your card, okay? But do not bring your humility because we're going to fight. And so I sat there and I was like, you know what? This is God. This is the bush here. This is the bush talking to me. My hair started getting all gray and flowy and looking like
getting Sam's all. What?
And I said, Ryan Smith, here it is, buddy. Okay? You're being called out and we will have people there to witness your defeat. You will kneel before John, okay, for this
one. Oh, my God. I feel like I need to go to church after listening to this blasphemy. I don't even know what to do right now. So the thing is, I got friends on the show, and I'm like, yo, I like to point out that I still love Jesus. Y'all are going to question me. What just happened?
I didn't know he was going to go with the burning bush analogy, so I can't, you know.
You know that the Ten Commandments is like my favorite movie, so it's getting close to the time for me to start watching. Today's April 1st. I got 19 days to actually sit down and watch it. I'm going to watch it on April 20th. Okay, for all the reasons above. Okay,
but the real question is, when are you guys gonna win your Street Fighter or throw down on Street Fighter?
So it looks like it's gonna be sometime that weekend, be it the 12th, the 13th, or the 14th. I don't want to interfere in the people's tournament because I know it might get a little serious there. So I'm gonna find a machine somewhere, and we're gonna pull out the cameras. If we put it on Instagram, if we put it on Facebook. Heck, we might even stream it on the Combat Sports website because this is going to be monumental.
You guys should do it next week since there's no fights. I'll pick my winners.
Well, so all I got to say is, you know, we could definitely do it. Let's find a time to do it. I don't mind. I just want to get it done because the fact is that we've been talking about it too long. And I mean, this is truly become the Habib Nurmagomedov and Tony Ferguson saga where we say we're going to do it, but then we don't actually do it. So let's just go ahead and do it. I'm not afraid. Like I told John on Facebook, and I'll say it again on the show just so that it's recorded. Bring your quarters. Bring your tokens. Bring a full game card. Bring whatever you need, because what's going to happen is I am going to clown you on Street Fighter 2, and you're going to have to come back, and you're going to have to atone for your sins. That's all I got to say.
And I'm going to quote the RZA on this one from the Wu-Tang Clan. Snap out of that dream. Okay. So, and I'm going to leave it at that. I can't say the actual word because, you know, we're trying to leave it PG-13. I want his kids to hear this. I want my kids to hear this. So when I show the video, whatever happens, happens. Somebody's going back home, a glorious warrior, and somebody's just going back home. That's all I got to say.
All right. Well, Bellator and the UFC delivered solid fight cards this past weekend. Bellator 219 visited Temecula, California, where Saad Awad faced Brandon Gritz in a lightweight face-off, and Justin Gaethje faced Edson Barboza in the city of brotherly shove, Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. But there's a lot of action on both cards, so let's get into our segment focused on the results from the two biggest MMA promotions in the world, two of the biggest promotions, because we can't forget about ONE FC, the official decision.
The official decision.
This is the official decision. This is where we look at the fights that were this past weekend. Bellator 219. This was Awad versus Gertz. This was March 29th, 2019 at Pechanga Resort and Casino in Temecula, California. We had four fights on the card. Joe Schilling defeated Keith Barry via unanimous decision. Andre Koreshkov defeated Mike Jasper via unanimous decision. Daniel Strauss defeated Shane Crutchin via submission in the first round. And in the main event, Brandon Gertz defeated Saad Awad via unanimous decision. Now, John, you were talking about this card before the before we started recording. You want to give us our listeners a quick overview of all the action in one big summary?
Yes, rock 'em, sock 'em. That's it.
And there you have it. Good job, Bellator. We're going right into UFC on ESPN. Barboza versus Gaethje. This is March 30th, 2019 at the Wells Fargo Center in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. There were five fights on the cards. Sadiq Youssef defeated Shaman Moraes via unanimous decision. Michelle the Karate Hottie defeated Karolina Kovalkiewicz via unanimous decision. This fight, I mean, she was dominant, man. I can't really say my, like, you know, I've been saying that Karolina Kovalkiewicz, even though she is one of my favorite fighters, I love to say her name. I love the way that she just is just kind of chill when she walks into the ring right before a fight. She just got dominated, man. Michelle Waterson is just a beast.
She came back from her little hiatus, and she was extremely dominant. Her speed, her technique, it was on point.
Now, KC, she was talking about in the post-fight interview that she has been training with her husband, and he gets fully padded up and everything, and she goes 100%. She said that being able to go 100% on her husband in sparring has given her what she needed to be able to really show a marked difference in the way she approaches fights today. What are your thoughts on that?
I am a huge fan of the notion of being able to go 100% in sparring. It's honestly the way that I played football too. It's like, I know we're in practice, but like I'm here to learn how to win. And if you learn lazy habits in practice, then that's how you're going to perform. And so I love that approach of being able to go all out and simulate the fight. Like, practice should be simulating the fight, which means you've got to know what it is to throw bombs when you're fatigued, how to stay with good form and good technique. So I love that notion, and I hope more people start to pick that up. I mean, her performances, I think she's going to be able to lead by example.
So one of the things she talked about was the fact that she wanted a title shot, that after this victory against Karolina Kovalkiewicz, who is ranked ahead of her, she's ranked number 6 and Michelle Waterson's at number 9, that she should be in the conversation for a title shot. Now, we know that Rose Thug Nohair Namajunas is currently slated to fight number 5 Claudia Gadela, and there are two fighters who are above her. It looks like they're 3 and 4 or tied for number 3. I don't know how this was working on the UFC website. But Nina Ansaroff and Tatiana Suarez. Huh?
What?
Ansaroff.
Huh?
Nina Ansaroff.
Nina and Sarah.
Nina Ansaroff. That's her name.
Yeah, I got no room to make fun of it. Like, can I take that back? Let me just start over. Lest someone comes for me. I'm good.
Hey, Nina Ansaroff and Tatiana Suarez are both ranked higher than Michelle Waterson at number 9, and they both won a title shot as well. I think they're going to be facing off kind of in a number one contender kind of fight we've got a lot of people at wanting a title shot right now. So I guess my question to both of you is, does Michelle Waterson at this point, having defeated Karolina Kovalevich in dominant fashion, Karolina Kovalevich having fought for the title not long ago, is Michelle Waterson deserving of a title shot, or does she need one more fight to be able to stake that claim? John, yeah, I'll let you go first.
I think she needs one more fight, honestly. I understand everybody's hunger for a title shot because nobody's there just to fight and just not be a champion. If you're not there to be a champion, what is your point? Okay. Mm-hmm. I think the honest thing to do, put up some tournament, some brackets, and just let them go for it. And whoever's at, do it Bellator style. And whoever's at the end, there's your champ.
KC.
So given that the UFC is not truly based on a ranking system, I believe that there is a strong argument for Karate Hottie to have another, have the next title shot after Thug Rose demolishes Claudia. The problem that I see with this is that it's apparent that the UFC wants the Karate Hottie as the next champ because she's extremely marketable. And that's just code speak. It's a dog whistle to simply say that she's attractive. Like, people want to see her. Her skill set is good enough that people will respect her fighting. But realistically, they do a really good job of just marketing her, putting her face out on things. And her as champion is really good for the sport in the sense that it's going to drive more viewers, more eyeballs. So is she earning a spot? 100%. Yes, she is an amazing fighter. But is that really what gets her the title shot? No, it's the marketability. And that is the problem with the current way that the UFC handles rankings.
All right. Just to kind of put a bow on this, she has a really compelling argument that she made that she has been in the top 10 longer than Nina and Tatiana. She's been around and been hanging around that top 10 for a very long time. It's really her time to get that title shot, but I still recognize and respect the latter, even if the UFC doesn't. And the fact is those fighters are ranked higher than her. So I can see two ways, but either way, it's going to require Michelle Waterson to fight one more time. I could see her fighting the winner. Jessica Andrade, Rose Namajunas versus Claudia Gadela. I could see her fighting the loser of that fight. And then the winner of Nina and Tatiana get to fight for the title. And so Michelle Waterson but just needs one more fight. Huh?
In a sense, aren't you just delaying the inevitable? Because Karate Hottie is going to beat the next person that is thrown in front of her. There's little doubt given who she would have to fight to take on a title shot. She's probably going to win that fight. So why not just skip that fight and just give her the title shot?
Because you've got people in front of her who are also deserving. I mean, the Claudia Gadela is one of them. You know, I believe that the Nina Ansaroff and Tatiana Suarez fights are booked. So that is a 3-4 kind of fight. So yeah. I don't know. At that point, even though Karate Hottie has been fighting and she's been in the top 10 for a very long time, you've got two fighters that are ranked higher and they're fighting each other. You don't get much better than that.
Right.
So, there's some things that I think need to be resolved there, but I think she's one win away, like John said, and you know, I think she can do it. So on the Karate Hottie hype train, I just want to go ahead and say that and, just hang in there. Keep fighting. Josh Emmett defeated Michael Johnson via knockout in round 3. This was, I don't know. It was a back and forth kind of fight. I had Michael Johnson in this fight. I don't know that I had him winning the rounds, but he was very much competitive until he wasn't.
Yeah, it didn't matter if you were having him win the round. I think Josh was like, "No, I'm going to win this round," and literally knocked the snot out of this dude. And he just locked up and hit the ground hard. I mean, it was beautiful. It was anime worthy the way he hit him. Okay, and I was just like, wow, because I couldn't pick a winner all the way up to that point. So you know,
something I learned early on from our host here, mm-hmm.
in our first fight is the importance of footwork in a boxing match and getting inside. And that was, I think, the real key to victory here with Josh Emmett versus Michael Johnson. Towards the end of that round three, you noticed that Josh was able to still stay inside of Michael Johnson and land the big punch. And that's eventually what took out Michael Johnson. Like, it was good footwork and spacing and distancing. Like, that was...
Yeah, that's great analysis. I mean, it was Emmett did a great job. I know that Tyron Woodley talked about the fact that Emmett was kind of headhunting the whole time, and he eventually landed it. You know, and so the critique was, hey, just, you know, conceal what you're trying to do with a couple of feints, you know, and throw some combos instead of just headhunting with that one punch. But, yep. You know, if it works, it works. Yeah, keep doing it till it doesn't work anymore. Jack Hermanson defeated David Branch via submission in round one. This was not much of a fight. It was like, I'm going to take you down, and then I'm going to guillotine choke you, and you're not going to be able to do much about it. And that Brazilian jiu-jitsu black belt that you own is garbage.
Apparently. I don't know what happened there. I mean, honestly, it was like he grabbed onto the fence, and the ref called him on it, and I think he lost focus for a second, and it cost him the match. I mean, that's the only thing I could think of, because I'm like, this dude here, he is a black belt. He's a Gracie black belt under Henner. Gracie. And they don't give out black belts like that, okay? And it was just like, I was stunned, because I was expecting more, because it was a simple – only thing he had to do was just turn his body, and he would have got out of that. And I'm like, I'm not even a jiu-jitsu practitioner, and I knew that all you had to do was turn your body. But he didn't. He actually turned – he was supposed to turn away, but he actually turned in. And it was just like, oh, thank you. And he just snatched it on and put it on harder. And it was just like, I don't know. Everybody was stunned there on his side, and I was stunned with them. So
there ain't much to say after that. I mean – Yeah, I mean, you pretty much covered. I was watching it going, no way. And I mean, because we picked David Branch, like, oh yeah, this guy, he's great. And then he laid an egg. And speaking of laying an egg, Justin Gaethje in the main event defeated Edson Barboza via knockout in round one. Let me just say, before we get started, there is a little bit of business we need to take care of.
No, don't do it. Don't do me like that.
Extra onions, extra pickles, sir.
I mean, I picked Edson Barboza. I thought that Edson Barboza was going to be the guy. Like, you know, Justin Gaethje keeps getting beaten up. Because
Justin,
I mean,
CTE Gaethje.
Yeah, like he just takes the punches and keeps on coming. And it was exciting because we started seeing these leg kicks. I mean, they weren't running from each other. There was no fear.
No.
This was straight up, we're going to fight. And then Edson Barboza started taking a little bit of damage. He tried to get away, and Gaethje catches him on the exit. Did you see Edson Barboza? Like, okay, he looked like when you spray a cockroach and it dies. And, you know, his legs are in the air, and his legs are in the air. That's how Edson Barboza was. His legs are in the air, his hands are in the air, and he's just looking up at the lights like, what just happened?
Yeah. Yeah. So he's saying that he got hit with a raid bomb. Really? I refuse to give Justin CTE Gaethje that much credit. Congratulations. You won, but no, I'm not giving him a raid. I'm not telling you. He is not a can of raid that squashed the Barboza Cucaracha. I'm not going to do it. I'm not going to do it. Sorry, you can run up on me, Justin. I'll just run you over my truck, man. I mean, I'm not even trying to fight you. Okay? I'm not even trying to fight you.
Well,
you know?
Sure.
You know, I play GTA, okay? So I know what's up. So,
yeah. All right. Hey, KC, what are your thoughts on the fight?
The leg kicks are devastating. Man, I didn't want to ever get hit with anything like that. If you leg kick me like that during a fight, I have no shame in saying, I don't want to do this anymore. I retire. In the ring, I will. This is no longer fun. I quit.
Wow.
Those are some serious leg kicks.
Yeah, it was. And the thing was, is that they started throwing him. So Gaethje threw one, and then Barbosa threw one back, and it was like, blow, blow. And everybody's just like, wow, that's crazy how they're just taking these things. And then, you know, it just allowed Gaethje to get inside. He crept inside, started clinching, and then it was all over.
So, but the thing is, I liked Edson's approach to the leg kick, though, because he threw a couple of single leg kicks, but more often than not, you saw a leg kick followed by a straight right or an overhand right. So he was stringing stuff together, but just barely off the mark. There were a couple of times where he was going to take off Gaethje's head, but just barely missed the mark. So it was a good strategy, just poor execution.
But we've seen this before. We have seen this before, and we saw it a long time ago. Okay. Does nobody remember Bloodsport with Jean-Claude Van Damme?
I'm a little too young for that one. How's that going?
What was that? Because, you know, it was the second to final match. It was in the semifinal round.
Against Paco. And,
yeah, versus Paco. Very good. Give this man some points. And they just went leg kick. And, you know, Frank Stu's like, come on. And, you know, they're kicking each other in the rib cage, which I'm pretty sure, you know, if those were real hard kicks, neither one would have a rib cage anymore. But that's what we saw from. Because in my mind, I was like, they're actually trying to do the blood sports scene. That's what they were doing. And, you know, once again, you know, the guy got stiffed, but that's okay. It's okay. It's
yeah.
Normal.
It's unfortunate normal. Because I really wanted to see Edson Barbosa start to make his climb back up the 155 pound ranks. Cause I don't think that Justin Gaethje is competitive. Once you get to Tony, once you get to Connor, once you get to Habib, it's not competitive there.
Yeah, I can like these guys are still going to be here. I mean, you know.
I well,
mean,
I don't say, I don't know. Think that Justin Gaethje's career is going to last much longer if he keeps taking beatings the way he's taken in order to win.
Oh, I agree.
I believe in the Demetrius Johnson school of fighting. My job is to hit and not be hit. If I have to get hit to hit you, I'm doing something wrong.
Very good.
So anyway, that is the official decision. Let's get into the headlines that are making waves this week with Finding the Angles.
Finding the Angles.
This is Finding the Angles. This is where we look at the headlines that are making waves in the MMA world. First thing, we gotta go to 1FC because they debuted two fighters that we know and love, Eddie Alvarez and Demetrius Mighty Mouse Johnson. Unfortunately, it did not go well for one of the fighters. Eddie Alvarez was defeated by knockout in the first round by Timofey Nasyukin.
Very good. Very good on that pronunciation, sir.
Thank you so much, because I was practicing it. Even though I really want to call him, I'm gonna Texas, since we're from Texas, and Texans have the right to be able to pronounce things however they want, a.k.a. nuclear.
America.
Eddie got defeated by a guy named Timofey Nasyukin.
Oh, I'm so using that tomorrow.
I mean, he basically, I mean, but that's basically the tale of the fight. I mean, if you watch the fight, yeah. Timofey hit him with one of those nasty, you could, and that was it.
Yeah, it was definitely a bus driver uppercut, man. It was pretty bad.
What is a bus driver uppercut? What is that?
Okay, all right. So, a couple of years ago, okay, if you occasionally fall into the dark side of the internet,
I know where you're going now. I know where you're going now. Okay, go ahead.
There was this altercation on a bus in Cincinnati, where this girl was talking very disrespectfully to the bus driver, and was teasing him and taunting him. At one point, she spit on him, and the bus driver got up and apparently had had enough, and he kept saying, "Oh, you're going to jail. Oh, you're going to jail." And in the swiftest move, he puts on an uppercut, and it sounded like, you know how you blow up a balloon and you pop it? It sounded just like that. And the entire bus erupts on the bus driver talking about that's a female. Meanwhile, the bus driver, after he collects this girl who had literally got separated, her conscience got separated from her body, he grabs her by the back belt loop and then by the back of her shirt and proceeds to throw her out onto the grass like she is a duffel bag. And that's the bus driver uppercut, people. Mm,
yep.
In a nutshell.
Yeah. Once you reference the video, I knew exactly what you're talking about. Yeah.
I'm putting it up on Instagram tonight so people understand.
Okay. You say you're going to put it on Instagram.
And I have. I did. I put stuff on Instagram. I'm starting to post more and more, people. You'll all have right. to forgive me. I'm posting. I'm getting better. I got one video up last week. I just couldn't find anything else interesting.
Okay. All right. I just, you know, I'm I am now monitoring your Instagram because no, where are you putting things on Instagram? That's what I want to know.
Okay. You know what? I take it back. It's Twitter that I usually post more videos on. Okay, I do post videos on Twitter.
Okay, so you see,
Twitter is easier for me to put videos on there. So I'll do that. I will find the bus driver uppercut and I will post it up there. There's another topic that I want to talk about that I see that we're going to talk about that I'm going to put something up for it as well because I'm very excited about this news.
All right. So the other thing, Demetrius Johnson also had his debut in 1FC. He won his fight via submission in round two versus Yuya Wakamatsu. And the interesting thing, if you go back and watch this fight, which I just watched some of the highlights, but
it was very good.
Wakamatsu landed some punches. I mean, when you saw Demetrius Johnson in the post-fight interviews, dude had swollen face. And we ain't seen swollen face on Demetrius Johnson in many moons because we know that Henry Cejudo sure didn't give Demetrius Johnson swollen face. He gave him lay on the dude face, which whatever that means.
That sounds so creepy. Okay.
So, but Demetrius Johnson is still, is still very dominant in 1FC. So, how many fights does he have to win in 1FC before we can continue to putting him in the greatest of all time category?
Okay. I want to see him fight two more times before I put him in the greatest of all. Just for the simple fact that if you watch this fight all the way through, this tells you the level of competition that he had in the UFC versus possibly what he is going to fight now. Because one thing I do understand is in the Southeast Asian countries that they tend to respect the lighter weights a lot more than the heavier weights, whereas we tend to respect the heavier weights more than the lighter weights. And it showed. Yuya came in there with a game plan, and this was like the first time I've ever seen Demetrius Mighty Mouse actually fight. I mean, he was fighting in there. He was not just, you know, implementing his will upon somebody. He was not oppressing somebody. This dude had defense. He had attacks. He had movement. And you could tell how happy Demetrius was and how relieved he was because the moment that he got that submission, he jumped up and started celebrating. That's how happy he was. So that tells me that he actually had to fight in there. And I want to see him fight two more times.
All right, I got you. Even though his celebration was the same celebration he always does.
But it wasn't with as much enthusiasm as it was there. This one had way
more. I mean, I respect your opinion on this, but I've seen him do those same, I don't know what you call them, hurricanranas or whatever he does whenever he wins.
Tornado kicks.
Yeah, those tornado kicks. So, but I'm happy. Demetrius Johnson is my favorite fighter. I'm happy that he is back in the win column and he is moving on after that whole debacle with Henry Cejudo. Mm. Josh, the War Master Barnett.
Oh, yeah.
Signs with Bellator on the Ariel Helwani show. And I like the Ariel Helwani show when it's just him. Like, I don't need Chael Sonnen. As much as I'm a Chael Sonnen fan, I love Chael's trash talk. I don't like Chael as an analyst.
Why?
What makes Chael a great heel and a great person to talk trash when you're a fighter makes him a terrible analyst. I don't like the way he just sounds arrogant on the mic. Like, you know, everything that he's talking about is just so elementary, and you know, it's not my thing. It's not my bag, baby. So, I like Ariel Helwani because he's a consummate journalist. He is humble and very thankful, and Chael is the antithesis of that. So, I don't like Chael as an analyst. I like him as a fighter. I like him as, that kind of persona. So that's why I don't watch Ariel and the Bad Guy or whatever it's called. But what I learned about Josh Barnett that I didn't know, besides the fact that he signed on Ariel Helwani's show, and he is looking to fight on June 22nd in London for Bellator. He's a massive professional wrestling guy, and he was talking about how they are doing a real blood sport, to kind of toss back to what you were talking about with the Frank Dukes Paco fight with Justin Gaethje and Edson Barbosa. He's actually doing a real blood sport kind of thing with GCW. They're not going to do any ropes. It's going to be catch wrestling and shoot fighting on a raised platform. So there's no ring. You're just on this raised platform, and it's shoot fighting and catch wrestling. So for those of you out there who don't know what shoot fighting and catch wrestling is, it's close to what you would what we would call MMA, but not exactly. Like shoot fighting is wrestling with some submissions. Catch wrestling is wrestling with some submissions. Shoot fighting is kind of like it's real punching, but it's MMA, pure MMA kind of thing.
That's correct. The shoot fighting rules, if I remember correctly, palm strikes to the head, straight punch, you could close fist to the body. There is ground fighting. They tend to do a lot of leg locks more in shoot fighting than they do in other grappling martial arts. So look for that to happen. Josh Barnett, just so you know, Josh Barnett's knowledge of catch wrestling is unsurpassed. He actually has a school where he is teaching people catch wrestling as a martial art. A lot of the moves that we see in professional wrestling originated in catch wrestling. The Boston Crab, the torture rack, the original Argentine backbreaker. Yes.
They're dope.
Yeah, those are real moves. And, you know, they were learned in catch wrestling. It's just professional wrestling made it fancy.
I think my cousin listens to this show, and I'd like to say, now that I'm bigger than you, I dare you to try the Boston Crab on me now. Yo, this was my nightmare as a kid. My cousin would come to my house, beat me up, put me in the Boston Crab, and I would have to do everything in my power not to cry. Because if you cry, it just hurts more. So I hate, I had PTSD the moment you said Boston Crab. I was like, don't hit me. So if you're listening, I will fight you.
All right.
So, and if people think I'm joking about the Boston Crab being a legit submission, if KC's commentary doesn't convince you, there was a recent MMA match where the guy actually won via Boston Crab.
Yeah, we covered it on the show, and it was the most ridiculous. Like, how do you, as a professional fighter, like, I understand as a kid, maybe if the other kid is bigger than you or whatever, in KC's situation, it is possible to get someone in a Boston Crab. But how do you get someone in a Boston Crab as a professional mixed martial artist? That's what I don't understand.
You know what?
That's how they get you.
You know what? Josh actually answers that question. Okay. Ooh. He actually does answer that question. He had a there's a tutorial series. If you ever I like a move of the week on sharedog.com. If you go back
100 years.
A couple of years. I won't say 100 because that's carbon dating me. You will see he actually talks about how to transition into a Boston Crab. And I will make it my mission in life tonight. That is going to be the video. I was going to put up a Josh Barnett MMA highlight. I still may do that as well so people can understand who Josh Barnett is and how relevant he is, why we talk about, because he was one of the early days, he was one of the youngest heavyweight champions. I think he still actually holds that title as the youngest heavyweight champion in UFC history. So, and he was on a great, on a meteoric rise until he got busted for PEDs.
Yeah, but he didn't get busted for PEDs. It was a sample that was contaminated and, you know, he went to arbitration, which is why he signed with Bellator, was because of the fact that USADA villainized him, took away his ability to fight, and then he was proven that he did not intentionally take a tainted supplement in order to gain a competitive advantage, you know. And so that was the reason why I'm going here is because he talks about it on Ariel Helwani's show and it compares and contrasts it to the way that things are being handled now, where USADA doesn't, whenever they find an adverse reaction, they do not call out the fighter and you know, until they have, you know, definitive proof that this was an attempt to, not an innocent tainted supplement or some other type of incident, false positive or whatever, and it is indeed something that they can sanction before they announce it. So he talked about it on the show and compared and contrasted it with the current light heavyweight champion whom will remain nameless for the purposes of this conversation, which made for a very interesting conversation. But Josh Barnett also talked about other changes that he'd like to see made to mixed martial arts, namely the separation from the boxing, from the boxing commission and the way that there's a 10-point scoring system and the way that the rounds work and all those kinds of things. That he actually said that he wanted to go back to the 10-minute first round and 5-minute second round, and then for championship another 5-minute round for a third round, as opposed to the five-minute rounds. So I thought that was interesting. He talked about getting rid of the 10-point must system. Mm-hmm. He talked about his desire to add knees to the head to a downed opponent, which seems very brutal, and then down kicks for a downed fighter as opposed to up kicks that are legal. He talked about how he hates it when people say that if a close fight goes to split decision, that was considered a good fight, which I have been known to say. He's like,
it is not.
You do not understand how it works if you think a split decision is a mark of a good fight. Uh-huh. Okay. I that means I need to do the War Master says I need to do more research. So I shall do that. But it was a very interesting conversation. I thought it was very, very fun to listen to him. He's always great on the mic, and being there with Ariel Helwani, who's a huge fan of his, it was very interesting. So go out and check out Josh Barnett and Ariel Helwani on the Ariel Helwani Show. John Jones talks about fighting Stipe Miocic online. Everybody lost their freaking mind, and then he turns around and signs a fight with Thiago Santos. So, yeah, I don't know if no one wants to see the Thiago Santos fight. At least I don't, because we know how that's going to go. I want to see the Stipe Miocic fight. KC.
Yes.
You have a thoughts on that?
I was more of a fan of the Stipe fight, but I mean, I don't know if either one of them actually matter.
I mean,
I mean, realistically, like, if he fights Miocic, great. Like, it's not a true title shot or anything. So what's the point?
Well, the point is that Daniel Cormier still hasn't fought his last fight on his contract. And if John Jones could get a Stipe Miocic fight in the next month or two, and he beats Stipe Miocic, then you've got this fight where John Jones fought the only person at heavyweight who has a claim to fight, legitimate claim to fight Daniel Cormier.
Oh, okay. That makes sense.
I mean, at that point, it's like huge fight because now you've got John Jones as a heavyweight and you got one last fight for the heavyweight title. And yeah, that would be, so you could print money.
It's a tough one for DC in this spot because legacy matters, right? He's got the blemish of never actually having beaten John Jones. So to fight John Jones again and lose, oh, on your final fight, that is not how you want to go out. But if you win, though, and the other side is he's looking for a money shot, a title, not a title.
Money
he's
fight.
Got, he's looking for a big money fight. Barring Steroid King being able to actually be cleared to fight, the big money fight that comes for DC because he doesn't have beef with anyone else, the big money fight has to either be, I was going to say Ngannou, but Ngannou's not a big enough draw that people are paying big money for pay-per-view. It has to be the John Jones fight if he wants a money fight.
Okay, so let's talk about this for a second. We all know that DC and Jones, they're going to fight again. All right, that's if Brock does not show up, okay, like he's supposed to, it's going to be DC and Jones again because neither one can leave each other. They can't quit each other. That's the thing. They can't quit each other, and they're destined to fight again. Why even play around with the Stipe fight? Just go straight to Jones DC 3. I mean, I don't want to see it personally because in my eyes, in my opinion, DC, the only way that DC is going to lose to Jones is if Jones is juicing on something. And right now, he's got a free pass to juice for next 7 years. So, no, I don't want to personally see that because Jones can't stay clean. Well, give him somebody else. Give him anybody else.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, no one else is going to make the money, though. And you want to go out with a bang. And, you know, Brock Lesnar, I haven't seen anything from Brock Lesnar that says that he's coming back.
Yeah, he's wrestling.
He's wrestling. He's training. And he's losing a lot of weight. And one thing that people are saying, like, oh, he's dropping weight. He's losing that. He's not just dropping weight, people. He's toning up, okay? And that's a scary thing because this is going to be toned up faster Brock, and we don't want toned up faster Brock. I would rather take a fast, strong Brock, but not a faster, strong Brock because that's what's going to end up happening, and it's going to be scary, and I'm gonna feel bad for DC because now he's going to have to wrestle that 105-6, you know, win-loss record, Brock, if he keeps it at this rate.
Here's what I didn't realize, though, is I was dead wrong in my initial one. I think Brock gets cleared to fight because of John Jones' new standard of PED acceptance.
Yeah.
So we can say that, oh, well, Brock, because of his other job, is basically required to do steroids, and so these are just trace metabolites left over.
It's okay.
That's not going to be true.
Yeah.
That's right. But that's what happened.
I'm pretty sure his piss consistency is the same as a 5-weight. So, you know, I mean, he might as well just go on in there as he is right now and just juice himself to the gills, you know, where his eyes are like bloodshot red. And just go in there and just fight DC as it is, because at this point, as far as I'm concerned, until they deal with John Jones, it does not matter if everybody fails on a PED test at this point.
Why train when you can take Tren?
Exactly.
Steroids for the win.
All right. Well, clearly you guys are like, it's funny, man. I vaguely remember a few months ago, you guys were defending John Jones. And now all I'm seeing is haterade all around. And it's like, for me, it's like, I will just as soon say, hey, it's unfortunate. I blame the UFC on this because they lack the, the ability or the will to actually create a standard that allows for some level of picogram. So, I believe that they need a standard. And since they don't have a standard, that means that John Jones is currently out of, he's outside of the competitive standard there. It's zero. You cannot have any type of thing, but they are allowing this to go on, but they don't have an official policy. And so that's a UFC thing, I think. And Josh Barnett, just to kind of circle back with him, Josh Barnett that's what he ultimately came to. He's like, I hold the UFC and USADA responsible for this situation with John Jones. It's unfair mm-hmm. for people like Josh Barnett to have experience, and even Junior Dos Santos for that matter, to experience those types of sanctions that they took for what ultimately results in a false positive. But because the powers that be have not shown the necessary will to fix this, you've got someone who is currently fighting with effectively PEDs in his system, and that's unfair for the fighters. That's unfair. Trace amounts, but still, because you don't have a standard, mm-hmm. trace amounts matter. And even if those trace amounts don't amount to a competitive advantage, you don't have a standard that allows for those trace amounts. So therefore, it matters.
Okay, and just to clarify, I never defended John Jones. Okay, if anything, y'all should go back and listen. I said that if John Jones is going to be a champion, he's going to have an asterisk by every one of his defenses until he can pee clean for at least 6 months. Okay, as far as I'm concerned, he is the champion, but he is a tainted champion because he cannot defeat DC without being busted by USADA. So no, I do not defend anybody that's going to cheat. Okay, you're right, Ryan. If there's going to be, if they don't set the standard is simple. It's pass, fail. That's it. You either are completely clean or you're busted and you're fine. There should be no type of if, ands, or buts, no exemption to the rule. They gave a pass for John Jones saying that the next 7 years this could be in the system. That's unfair to every fighter on the roster right now because guess what? That means that man can micropulse for the next 7 years and get away with it. The only time he should be fighting is if he can pass a piss test. And that's how I truly feel about it. So, like I said, I do not feel, I don't care if John Jones does fight. He could fight the greatest. He could fight everybody. He could fight dead people. He can go fight, people from the grave. As far as I'm concerned, he's still a cheater, and I'm not impressed.
I support him. Hashtag Team Bones Jones.
All right.
Hashtag pills.
Oh my God! Come on, man.
Okay, you can bleep that out. You can bleep that out. Good right. health, it, dude.
Okay. So right when we finished the recording last week, Conor McGregor announced that he was retiring, and so I was like, KC, man, we gotta get the band back together so we can report that Conor McGregor has retired. And KC is like, man, I don't believe it, man.
I mean, the cynic in me came out, and I was like, hold on, let's take a closer look at this. And upon further review, we see that this was part of negotiations because Conor believes that he deserves a bigger stake within the UFC. He wants more ownership of who he fights, how he fights, and co-marketing with the UFC. Basically wants to be the Michael Jordan with his own brand within a brand. UFC is not having that. They believe that they made him. And so this is part of a bluff saying, look, you guys need me more than I need you. And we know it's a bluff because if you were serious about retiring, you wouldn't have still been training for a fight. But more so, you would have actually called USADA and said, I'm out of your testing pool, which he has not done. So as much as I want to see this guy gone, I want Conor out of there. The reality is he's not going anywhere. He's still got stuff to do.
I agree.
Yeah, and Dana White says as much. And so, you know, the thing is, though, is Conor is starting to talk about possibly going to WWE. And WWE has become this safe haven for fighters who made a name and a legacy for themselves in the UFC and then fall kind of afoul of Dana White and the powers that be. And so now it's like, oh, well, would WWE take Conor McGregor as a potential fighter? I mean, that is a huge name in the sport. There's a huge name in the sport. And
they can't pay him enough. There's no way.
They can pay him a lot.
They can pay him enough. They can pay him a lot of money.
They can pay him a lot of money.
For him to do ballerina to violence, yeah, they can pay him a lot of money.
Because the name recognition and Conor McGregor's ability to perform on the mic would have him the kind of following that we saw with people like Dwayne Johnson and Steve Austin.
I don't know that far, but okay.
I don't know that he can actually perform on the mic. I think he's digressed. If you look at from before Mayweather to after Mayweather, his mic talking abilities are trash. All he does is cuss. He's profane, but he doesn't actually sell the fight anymore.
I don't know that you really have enough data to really look at, because after the Mayweather fight, he's got one fight, and that is Khabib Nurmagomedov.
All right, so include the Mayweather fight, which is still a very small sample size, I'll say that. But what we're seeing is a digression, and I don't know if it's distraction or what, but his ability on the mic, he failed. He miserably failed against Nurmagomedov. And what he had to resort to against Mayweather to drum up more excitement was atrocious.
I disagree. I disagree. He was the biggest fight in UFC history was Conor McGregor, Khabib Nurmagomedov. The promoting that Conor McGregor did in that fight, and it was all on him because Khabib didn't do much talking. Conor carried all of the promotion. So I don't know how you can say that he's regressing. You know, at least with Floyd Mayweather, who is not an eloquent speaker in his own right, you've got Conor McGregor really carrying the promotion of two fights against two people who English is not their first language. That's right, Floyd. I came at you, bro. Don't send your muscle, because yeah, they could whoop me, but you, I like my chances.
I hear what you're saying, but I would also say that Conor's remarks have moved beyond fight game remarks into talks about religion, race, gender, sexuality, all these things that are just not pertinent to the fight game.
But I'm not defending that.
He did that for mind games. Okay, he was playing mind games there.
See, John is defending it. I'm not defending that.
I'm not saying what he did was right. I'm saying I understand. Okay, I understand what he was doing. He does have mic skills. However, he was trying to win that fight, and he knew that he couldn't beat Khabib, so he had to go low. He had to sit there and get at him because he, in his mind, he didn't see him see himself getting to Khabib. He just didn't realize that he was getting to Khabib, and Khabib just masked it very, very well. So when the time came, he unloaded on the boy, and that's why he was sitting there begging for forgiveness at the end of the second round of that fight.
It's just business.
Yeah, I guess so.
Yeah. I don't defend what he said. He said despicable things, and yes, you know, Conor McGregor, he can curse as much as he wants. That doesn't bother me. He went to places where I believe there are red lines that you should just not cross. Yes. But I don't think that takes away from his skills on the mic and his ability to bring a crowd. I think that takes away from his judgment. I think that takes away from his, you know, his morality and his ethics. But
Conor McGregor is the mumble rap of MMA.
Whoa.
Popular.
Whoa. You know what? That is not a bad analogy, to be honest. No, he's not saying that Conor McGregor is a mumble rapper, but what he's saying is that if you're talking about someone on the mic that does, you know, great promotion, like a lyricist in traditional rap music, that's not what mumble rappers do. But they're equally as popular. They're making millions of dollars, and they're not saying a whole lot. Like, you know, it's not like. Yeah, I don't know. I'm not mad at that analogy.
Yeah,
I'll have to think about whether or not I agree with it, but I do see where you're coming from there. Let's go to this one last one, and then we'll get out of here. Cain Velasquez is going to Mexican pro wrestling. It's not Lucha Libre, but it is a pro wrestling circuit within Mexico. I guess that means he's out of MMA.
Which league is he going to? Is it CMLL or is it? Well, AAA
He's going to AAA. He's going to AAA.
Interesting, because AAA is known for their lighter weights and their high acrobatics. So this will be interesting. I want to see Kane do a moonsault.
But Kane is surprisingly athletic. Hey, when you watch his training, he does some incredible kicks that never make it into the octagon. But that dude's athletic. I think he can hold his own.
I'm interested in pro wrestling again. And, you know, it's a shame, though, because I do believe that these fighters, these legitimate fighters going into wrestling promotions, it looks like an attempt to try and give some legitimacy to wrestling. But in reality, it looks, for me, it looks like it's cheapening the fight.
Well, I told Casey that I was going to pull my last time I went over this, because I talked about this when Tito Ortiz and Rampage Jackson went to the pro wrestling circuit TNA, and I was like, I disagree with it. I think it's a bad idea. I don't like the crossover. I think it cheapens the fight game and all that kind of stuff. I'm against it. I think we'll do a heavy back next week to kind of cover this. But I want all of you guys to follow us on social media. On Twitter, I'm at CST Ryan.
And I am at Obfuscated.
On Instagram. And we're talking about Twitter. So, John, since John uses Twitter, we have to plug Twitter. Okay. And Instagram, KC's at Push Pull Pray. I am at Combat Sports Talk. John is at Keys to Victory with an ES. We have merchandise on Amazon. But you can search for us on the website. Search our merchandise on the website. We've also doing the live event with George G. Money Stallworth. Let's get out of here.
See ya.
Farewell. A beaded saying adieu.
Our theme music is composed by Scott McCurry at scottdeancountry.com and KC Onyebuchi produced our lead-ins. I want to thank you for joining us for another edition of Combat Sports Talk. For KC Onyebuchi and John Keys, I'm Ryan Smith, reminding you to keep your hands up, your chin tucked, and throw bombs.